Chapter 5. Forensic. Lucy swiveled on her canteen seat, turning away from Dan's father. She'd met him so many times when Dan was alive, but now the resemblance struck her like a hammer. Like Dan, Adrian habitually rubbed the bridge of his nose as he closed his eyes to think, even though he wore no glasses. He kept his back straight as a rod, just as Dan had done. When he spoke to the catering manager, the undulations of his brow conveyed the same pragmatic skepticism that had kept Lucy alive in San Francisco. A torrent of love, grief, hope, and guilt collided in her core as she watched this older version of her soulmate move through the attack scene, unaware of her presence. She placed her hands on her knees and tried to steady her breathing, dipping her head so that it was shielded by her body.
"Are you okay?" whispered Fliss.
"Fine," said Lucy, staring at the floor, compulsively ruffling her short, choppy hair. Zipping sounds cut through the room as the cleanup team filled a dozen body bags. Shell-shocked onlookers gave statements while Adrian examined the creature's entry points.
"Do you know him?"
said Fliss, catching Lucy's glances up at Dan's father. Lucy nodded.
"What more can we do?"
protested a resident as Adrian's team rinsed the tables and seats with a fine spray from what looked like insecticide kits.
"Keep practicing your drills. Stay vigilant. Support one another in the days and weeks to come," said Adrian, closing his notepad. His tone was sincere but weary.
"What does that even mean? We do all those things already. And just look around. They stop nothing. This same thing happened at my friend's work and in my cousin's block. It's like you people aren't even trying to stop it,"
raged another resident, piling in. The tirade was met with approving murmurs around the room.
"We're doing everything we can," said Adrian firmly.
"Yeah, well, it's not enough, is it?"
cried the tearful resident, gesturing to the body bags.
"These creatures are adapting faster than we can learn about them. Working together is the best chance we have. That means staying strong. It means going to work when you're afraid, and getting up when your brothers and sisters fall. Above all, it means never giving up. We are working on it, I promise you. If you can do your bit, we will beat these infernal creatures together,"
said Adrian, broadening his reply to address the entire room.
"We're sick of words,"
retorted a resident, their voice cracking with emotion as they knelt beside a body.
"I agree. We need more action. And for that, we need people with ideas. If anyone here knows what more we could be doing, I'm all ears. Or if anyone wants to transfer to the frontline teams, my department is ready to train you and deploy you. We urgently need staff, so please step forwards,"
said Adrian, challenging the room. One by one, the residents avoided his glare. The disinfectant team finished spraying the room and followed the last body bag out to the street.
"My door is always open. I'm sorry this happened to you tonight. Truly. You are not alone. We'll get through this together. Keep practicing the drills,"
said Dan's father, placing a consoling hand on the nearest resident's shoulder before turning to follow his team out.
"Adrian!"
cried Lucy, standing suddenly and knocking her plastic chair over with a clatter. He stopped sharply in the doorway and turned. Lucy's heart pounded as their eyes met. For a moment, the pair stared at one another across the room, each fully taking in the other's appearance. She watched the recognition flash across his face. It was quickly replaced by a look of grave concern as he took in her ragged appearance. Lucy took a few hesitant steps closer, stumbling into another chair as she went. As she reached him, she realized his eyes were filling with tears. She stopped before him, nervously. He stared at her, his piercing eyes focused sharply on her, looking for truth.
"Dan,"
he croaked. Lucy shook her head, a tear tracing down her cheek as she forced herself to hold his gaze. Adrian turned briskly and shoved his way through the doors and out onto the street. Lucy hurried after him. Outside, the cleanup team were loading their equipment into a white van containing dozens of stacked body bags. Adrian stood to the side, leaning into the wall with his arms outstretched as if he was holding the entire building up. His shoulders shook as his head hung between his arms. Lucy approached him slowly and placed a hand on his shoulder.
I'm so sorry, she whispered.
He drew up abruptly and shook himself out, hastily wiping his cheeks dry.
We need to get back to work, he said with a shaky voice, setting off towards the street.
That's it? Said Lucy in astonishment.
More people will die if we don't. Come on,
he said, climbing into the driver's seat of a black car. Lucy glanced back at the canteen. Fliss and Jack would have to fend for themselves for the next few hours, she decided, hurrying after Adrian and taking the front passenger seat. He pressed the ignition button and the electric vehicle awoke, automatically illuminating the dark street ahead. A small, steady blue LED shone from the car's front and rear windows.
It's an impossible task, but we've got to try, said Adrian, taking a different route to the van.
His voice was strained, and he babbled uncharacteristically.
These creatures are hitting us every night, every day, all across town. We're firefighting the whole time. Just when we think we're making progress, something new evolves, and we get hit all over again. We need more research, but we don't have the people. I lost 5 in the last 3 days, all hit while investigating attack scenes. Soldiers are no good against this kind of infiltration. They cover the wall, and we cover the inside, or at least that's the idea. We hose it all down with a bit of chlorine, take away the bodies, tell people to be strong, and expect them to get on with it. And that's the crazy thing. They do. They get on with it, because there's nothing else they can do. There's nowhere safer. We burn the bodies so they can't be used by the creatures, but we still expect communities to get closure. There's no closure. Not when these creatures learn our shift patterns, or figure out the limits of a drone's flight time. So we adapt. We randomize our shifts. We use prime numbers. We vary patrol routes so there's no predictable cover. Then they adapt too. They get smaller and reach us in the factories, in the streets, in our beds. People demand to know what we're doing, what we've learned, but if they knew all of it, they'd lose their minds.
He barely stopped for a breath as he spoke, his hands tight on the wheel. Lucy hesitated, unsure if the outburst would resume.
Adrian, I'm so sorry, she said tentatively.
He scratched his chin 7 times as he waited at the crossroads, giving way to an ambulance before pulling up beside George Washington University Hospital, where illuminated corridors and wards shone out into the night.
He didn't suffer, began Lucy, but Adrian cut her off immediately.
Food security is the real problem, of course. It's the elephant in the room. We've got to keep the troops fed to preserve order, but we've also got to keep the people fed to prevent anarchy. We feed both sides, but we all know which side holds the cards. It's not long before they make demands. Not demands, of course, no, they're submitted formally via the official channels. It's all above board and legal, underpinned by meticulous arguments about the precise calorie expenditure of a night patrol and a daytime raid. They get their way. If they don't, no one wins. Better that one side wins a bit more than both sides lose everything. Damned food. When it comes down to it, that's all it's about. Always has been, always will be. Spring's coming. We need to get planting, ASAP, but of course the creatures have evolved to camouflage within the land and they take out our farmers. So we send troops to defend the farmers and put armor on the tractors, but the White House takes it upon itself to declare hydroponics as the only viable future, even though they know we don't have the energy capabilities to sustain large-scale indoor farming. But that's their view, meaning we have all the more urgency to keep the city secure. Only we've seconded our best defense researchers to the farm tech projects, meaning the creatures are learning about us faster than we're learning about them. So my new researchers go in unprepared and get killed at the scene, and we fall behind once again. It's driving us toward the point of no return.
Adrian unbuckled and climbed out of the car, slamming the door and continuing to rant as he headed into the main building, flashing a pass to the security guards. Lucy hurried after him, following him further inside the hospital until he reached a security door, above which read a sign, Department of Pathology. He punched in a code, tapped his card, and allowed his face to be scanned.
You don't have clearance for this,
said Adrian, looking at Lucy with bewilderment, as if he'd forgotten she was with him.
Adrian, stop it. Just stop it, okay? Please. I'm begging you. I know how awful this must be for you. Your son is gone. My partner. We've both lost someone at the center of our worlds. Can we at least talk about him? She implored.
You did freshman veterinary medicine, yes? That'll be enough. I can get you lab clearance. You work here now. Report to me in the morning, said Adrian as the door clicked open.
So we're just not going to talk about what happened? Said Lucy.
My son is dead. There's nothing more to discuss. I'll see you,
said Adrian, entering the lobby, He tapped the clerk's desk twice and gestured to Lucy as he continued into the building while the door closed in her face. Lucy crept into her room where Fliss was already in bed. The clerk had arranged for a patrol to drop Lucy back at her halls of residence, which they had done reluctantly. She undressed in the dim moonlight and changed into the baggy night clothes that came with the room. They smelled like an old person.
"I was worried you weren't coming back,"
said Fliss, sitting up and clutching her blanket.
"Of course I came back," said Lucy. "Was he the guy you know in D.C.? The senator?"
"Yeah."
"Is he gonna help us?"
"Maybe," said Lucy, climbing into the bed opposite.
"People in the canteen said a lot of bad stuff about him after you left."
"Like what?"
"Like the government doesn't care about them, they're lying to us, that sort of stuff." "Is it true?"
"No."
"They said the canteen attacks have happened in other districts, Lucy. Are we safe here?"
"I can't think of anywhere safer.
Some people from the canteen asked me to come to a meeting tomorrow night before curfew. Some groups lobbying the government to do more to protect workers. Apparently, they need members. You know, to stop the attacks."
"Maybe you should go. See what it's like," said Lucy. Lucy lay on her back, feeling her vertebrae unfurl as she sank into the mattress.
"Lucy, do you think Ruth's okay?"
said Fliss quietly. Lucy knew she should answer the girl and at least offer some words of reassurance, but the emotions were out of reach. She didn't know if Ruth was alive. She felt incapable of caring. She was numb.